Ever heard of the Nag's Head portrait?
Heard of it? That picture hung in my shack at Nag's Head for more than 50 years.
Nag's Head is near Cape Hatteras, North Carolina.
It was during the War of 1812.
This woman's been dead three quarters of a century.
My husband and the others noticed the schooner under full sail bearing down on that bar out there. A winter's gale was blowing. They put out and boarded her. The cabin looked as if some kind of a fancy woman had been living in it. That picture was hanging on the wall, and my husband took it. And they no more and got off that vessel before it went to pieces. In all the years the painting of that young woman hung in our shack, nobody ever figured out who she was.
If that painting, the Nag's Head portrait, was Theodosia Burr, it may be a clue to what happened to this remarkable and talented young woman who disappeared more than a century ago.
Some men never die. Though they pass from this earth, they are destined never to rest, but to stalk through the gloom, lonely and friendless, until the end of time. For time is the judge, and history the jury. And you, sitting there in judgment on this mystery, you are the 13th juror. This is the first in a series of unsolved mysteries written and directed by Arnold Marquis, creator of NBC's prize-winning programs, Unlimited Horizons, The Pacific Story, The Fifth Horseman, and featuring Kenneth McGowan, distinguished writer, critic, Broadway and Hollywood producer, and chairman of the Department of Theater Arts at the University of California at Los Angeles. Listen now to this mystery as we ask you, the 13th juror, what happened to Theodosia Burr?
This is Kenneth McGowan. Theodosia Burr, the woman in question, was the daughter of the brilliant and notorious Aaron Burr, the man who almost became president of the United States, who killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel, and who was tried for treason because of his complicity in the fabulous Mexican scheme.
Just a moment, Mr. McGowan.
Oh, yes, Miss Burr.
My father was a superior person.
An extraordinary person indeed, Miss Burr.
He was so elevated above other men that I regarded him with a strange mixture of humility, admiration, love, and pride.
Yes. That will give you some idea of Theodosia's regard for her father. And Aaron Burr, he was on Washington's staff in the Revolutionary War. Colonel Burr supervised every step of her training and education.
If I thought that Theodosia would become a mere fashionable woman, with all the attendant frivolity and vacuity of mind, I would earnestly pray God to take her forth with hence.
Oh, Father, Father.
Grace and allurement are nothing, Theodosia. If a woman is only...
Father, very little superstition would be necessary for me to worship you as a superior being.
A clever and beautiful girl, Theodosia. In stature, she was short like her father, and she had his graceful carriage, noble poise, and snapping black eyes. Her complexion was exquisite. By the time she was 14, she was the hostess of the stately Burr Mansion, Richmond Hill in New York. A large, rambling house on the crest of a hill overlooking the Hudson.
What a playful wit, and what ease and charm your talented daughter has, Colonel Burr.
She is a source of gratification to me, Your Excellency.
Oh, naturellement, Colonel.
Many famous men, Talleyrand, Louis Philippe, Jerome Bonaparte, were guests at Richmond Hill. And acting as hostess was beautiful and clever Theodosia Burr, a woman of poise and dignity years before most girls of her age. And Aaron Burr was her inseparable companion and advisor.
Washington Irving? Oh, yes, 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 Theodosia, I know.
He's studying law, you know, and he comes from a good family.
But is he the man for you, Theo?
He's quite talented, too. He's becoming interested in writing.
A writer? What is a writer, Theo?
Washington Irving might become a great writer.
Oh, my little Miss Prissy. Can't you think of any other man?
Yes, John.
John Vanderbilt, the young Dutchman?
Have you seen any of his paintings?
Oh, Theo, must you fall in love now?
Father, I'm 17.
Yes, yes, I know. But why must it be with an improvident artist?
Are you going to talk about Joseph Alston again?
Joseph Alston is a promising young man, Theo. He is talented, popular, well-traveled.
And the possessor of a large estate on the Waccamaw in South Carolina.
What is wrong with being a man of affairs and substance? Joseph Alston is also a member of the bar. And a poet.
Poet.
So, Joseph Alston came to Richmond Hill. Joseph Alston, tall and well-heeled, owner of many slaves and a plantation in North Carolina.
Mr. Dozier, marry me.
Mr. Alston, I have a sincere friendship for you. No more.
You will honor me, Miss Theo. And you love the plantation. And Charleston...
Charleston is full of plague and excessively hot. And I've heard it resounds with the yells of whipped Negroes. And that its gentlemen absorb themselves in hunting and gaming. And the women do nothing but attend parties and sip tea and try to look prim.
But now Theodosia had other things to think about. Her father was running for president against Thomas Jefferson. And Theo was in the midst of it all, campaigning and presiding at rallies and parties, always the gracious hostess, winning more votes with her smiles than the orators won with their speeches. And riding up and down the country, also fighting for votes, was another personage, Aaron Burr's bitter rival, Alexander Hamilton.
It's a tie between Jefferson and Burr.
Give it to Jefferson.
Give it to Burr.
Congress will have to decide.
It's got to go to Congress. That's the Constitution.
It went to Congress, and after the 35th ballot, Jefferson became president and Aaron Burr became vice president. And now Theodosia could think about herself. Joseph Alston was still there, and on February 2nd, 1801, they were married at Albany. They stayed to see Aaron Burr inaugurated as vice president, and then Joseph Alston packed his 17-year-old bride, the sparkling Theodosia, off to the Oaks, his estate on the Waccamaw in South Carolina. And the next year, their baby came, Aaron Burr Alston.
Come on up here, little fella. Oh, what a treasure you are.
Mm. He's Mama's little treasure.
Theo, you're feeling better, I trust?
I wonder if I'll ever get my strength back.
Oh, darling, you must rest.
Here, let me take the vice president.
Vice president? What a name for the little fella. Yes, that's what we'll call you, the vice president.
Let me take him. There.
Theo, you must lie down.
I'm worried about Father.
And Alexander Hamilton?
Yes, they're so bitter. Father says that Alexander Hamilton is trying
now,
to...
Now, Theo, darling, please. Your father's well able to take care of himself. Now, please, darling, just lie down there and rest. Huh?
Theodosia languished in the sultry heat, wrote long letters to her father and received long letters from him. The child grew, and Aaron Burr found delight in calling him Gampy, a name the child called him. Theodosia, in her weakness and fever, gave her waning strength to the child and to consideration of the rivalry between her father and Alexander Hamilton.
Theo! Theo!
Huh?
I've just had news that...
My father!
He's killed Alexander Hamilton.
Killed? How do you know?
The courier on the coach. They fought a duel in Weehawken.
Is Father hurt?
No, he wasn't touched, but he shot Hamilton down.
He wasn't hurt at all?
He wasn't touched at all, the courier said, but his bullet hit Hamilton and...
Thank heavens he's safe.
They've issued a warrant for his arrest in New York, New Jersey.
Warrant? What for?
For murder.
Oh, no. Many people are killed in duels. Hamilton's own son was killed in a duel only
Theo,
a few days.
Darling, your father's disappeared. Nobody knows where.
But he's vice president of the United States.
He's a fugitive, Theo. And they're scouring the country for him.
Theo lay back in her huge bed and stared emptily at the ruffled canopy above her. Now and again she held the child very close, but she no longer called him the vice president, no longer called him Grampy. She lay motionless and stared. Theo could do nothing but wait. If she knew her father, she would hear from him, and one night she did. One dark night, he appeared at the Alston place on the Mackinaw in South Carolina. Joseph Alston brought him to her room.
Father, father, father.
There, there, my child. Don't weep, Miss Prissy. Oh, please.
Father, father.
Nah, Theo, darling, everything's going to be all right, man.
They talked of the duel first, but this was the least of what Aaron Burr had to say.
There is untold wealth in Mexico. Mines of silver and gold. Treasure of the Aztecs.
But that is in Mexico, Father.
Are we to be proscribed by geography? What do we leave here? Chaos, compounded by charlatans and idiots.
But all we have is here.
And of what value is it now? Joseph, in Mexico, you will be head of the nobility. And you, Theodosia, you will be the chief lady of the court. And Gampy will be the heir to the throne.
The throne?
You'll set up a kingdom?
An empire. Louisiana Territory, the country west of us, and Mexico. All of Mexico. And I will be emperor. It is all planned. Harmon Benahasset, I will make ambassador to England. General Wilkinson, I will make commander-in-chief of the army. And Commodore Truxton, I may make him admiral of the Navy.
It is a dazzling plan.
Please lie down, darling. You
mustn't. It is a magnificent plan, worthy of your talents, Father.
What is the loss of a brief tenure as president compared with this?
And you, Father, will be the victor over the little men who thwarted you.
Oh, we will be the royal family. We who sit here in
you
this room.
You will be Aaron the First, Father.
Yes, and little Gampy, sleeping there in his crib. He will take up the reins as emperor when I drop them.
You must help us train him, Father.
Please lie down,
Theo. Our time would come, Father. Tell us, what must we do?
We will need money. Money to build boats, buy arms and supplies. Harmon Benahasset will advance the money, and you, Joseph, you can give your security.
Excellent, Joseph.
The expedition will be fitted out at Benahasset's island near the mouth of the Little Kanawha. I go there now to meet with all the leaders. And you must come to help work out the...
Both of us, sir?
Both of you. I will be waiting for you there.
We will come, Father.
Theodosia and Joseph Alston went to Blennerhassett Island near the point where the Little Kanawha River meets the Ohio. Theodosia's eyes glowed as she listened to her father speak. Flatboats would move down the Ohio to the Mississippi, to New Orleans. Perhaps New Orleans would be seized first. They heard talk of seizing and organizing Texas as a base. And then, the plan in mind, Theodosia and Joseph Alston returned to South Carolina to wait. They waited. Theodosia talked to little Gampy, told him about the fabulous land of Mexico, told him how they would go to Mexico City, where someday he would be an emperor. And then the scheme exploded.
Treason! Aaron Burr has committed treason!
Burr is trying to overthrow the government!
Colonel Burr's been caught leading an expedition against the United States and Mexico!
Stop it, I say!
They caught your father red-handed!
That's right, they caught
him! Stop it, I say! Stop it! How dare you speak this way about my father?
They arrested him down in Mississippi!
I don't believe it!
They're bringing him back to Virginia for trial! Yes.
They brought him back under arrest, and on March 30th, 1807, Colonel Burr was arraigned in Richmond before the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, John Marshall. Then began one of the most spectacular trials in American history, a former Vice President of the United States on trial for treason. People flooded into Richmond to see the trial, and Theodosia came too, sick as she was. She took a house in town and began to entertain.
You know, Alston, if I may be permitted an observation.
Why, of course, sir. Of course.
That sparkling smile of Mrs. Alston, sir, wins more friends for her father in one evening than Luther Martin, his attorney, could win for him in a month in court.
She loses no opportunity, sir.
And Luther Martin was eloquent.
God in heaven! Have we already, under our form of government, arrived at a period when a trial in a court of justice where life is at stake, shall be but a ceremony to transfer innocence from the jail to the gibbet in order to gratify popular indignation excited by bloodthirsty enemies.
The trial went on for 6 months, and Theodosia, with her steadfast courage and her strength, was her father's most powerful defense.
The knowledge of my father's innocence, my contempt for his enemies, and the elevation of his mind have kept me above any sensations of depression.
At last, while the whole world looked on, Aaron Burr was acquitted. Acquitted, the jury said, because the charge of treason was not proved. Celebrations broke out all over Richmond, but all the same, Aaron Burr was discredited, condemned by public opinion, denounced by the press, and outcast from politics. In the spring of 1908, Colonel Burr was hiding in New York under the alias of Mr. Edwards, and Theodosia was at his side as Miss Mary Ann Edwards.
The packet sails at dawn, Miss Prissy.
I dread to think that this is our last night together.
It is only temporary, Theo. I know the British ministry will adopt my plan to tear Mexico from the grasp of Napoleon.
I know they will, Father.
And now here. Here are the papers I told you about.
Your debtors?
Yes. Be sure to see to the collection of these monies. I shall need them for my living in England.
Of course, Father. Oh, but the thought of your leaving strikes me to the heart.
You still have your husband.
But Joseph is not you, Father.
I shall be back sooner than you think, Miss Prissy. And now, smile for me.
Oh, Father. Father. When shall we ever be together again?
Theodosia went back to Joseph and Gampy in South Carolina. Gampy was ailing. She sat beside his bed, stroking his forehead. Day by day, the doctor came and talked in deep, sonorous tones. Outside, the slaves prayed and sang. It was evening. Theodosia stood at the window, looking at the reflection of the setting sun on the wind river. Joseph tiptoed to her side and put his arm around her shoulders.
Theo.
Slowly she turned toward him.
Theo. Gampy is gone. Little boy's dead.
Gampy was gone, and her father was gone. Theodosia's health ebbed. She lay listless in her huge bed, looking up emptily at the ruffled canopy overhead. She wrote to her father, he wrote to her. Now that she saw his Mexican dream was hopeless, she directed her waning strength toward another objective, to clear the way for his return to America.
My dear madam,
she wrote to Dolly Madison, wife of the president,
you will recall that my father, once your friend, is now in exile, and that only the president can restore him to me and to his country.
She pleaded for her father.
To whatever fate Mr. Madison may doom this application, I trust it will be treated with delicacy. Since Mr. Alston is ignorant of this step I have taken in writing to you, let me entreat you, my dear madam, that you will have the goodness to answer as speedily as possible.
Whatever this letter achieved, Theo wrote her father, urging him to return boldly to New York.
If your creditors throw you into prison, Father, I will leave everything to suffer with you.
And at last, after 4 years of absence, Aaron Burr returned, landed at Boston, then came down to New York. Soon he was in communication with her. When he learned of her ill health, he sent a medical man, Timothy Green, to South Carolina to see her.
Your father prays that you may come to him in New York, Mrs. Alston.
I must go to him.
Theo, you could never stand that
trip. I must go to him, Joseph.
10 days of jogging in a stage on that Overland Trail?
It's been 4 years since I've seen him.
Your father has asked that I, as a medical man, report to him the state of your health.
But I am all right.
Timothy Green wrote to Burr that Theodosia could scarcely make the Overland journey. Burr replied, asking him to arrange passage for her on a vessel. Green wrote back,
I have engaged passage to New York for your daughter on the swift pilot boat, the Patriot.
The War of 1812 was on.
The Patriot, which is a schooner, is put in here for refitting.
Refitting for a dash to New York with the rich booty of her raids, for the Patriot had been out privateering.
My only fears are that Mr. Alston may think the mode of conveyance too undignified.
The Patriot's guns were stored below decks, a dangerous thing for a vessel making a run through waters infested by pirates. Also, the British fleet was lying in wait off Cape Hatteras. And there was a strong possibility of being caught in a midwinter storm off the Cape and falling prey to the bankers.
But Mrs. Alston is fully bent on going. We sail in about 8 days.
Days later, December 30th, 1812, Theodosia boarded the Patriot at Georgetown. With her came her maid and Timothy Green. With her also came all her trunks. But did she also bring aboard the mysterious painting which has become known as the Nag's Head Portrait? Now the stage is set for the unfinished story that has been a mystery for generations.
Where's the angel?
Alston went aboard to accompany his wife down to Charleston.
I wish I could go to New York with you, Theo.
You have no need fear for me, Joseph. Besides, who would take care of the plantation? Feel that fresh wind.
I hope you have these fair winds all the way to New York.
We will, Joseph.
Theo, I'm worried.
Oh, Joseph.
Well, we are at war with Britain, you know. And the British fleet is certain to be cruising off the Hatter's Cape to overhaul any vessel that tries to pass.
But you've given Captain Overstock's a letter to the British Admiral asking free passage for me. Besides, the British fleet may never even see us.
But it isn't only that, Don. This vessel is a valuable prize, and there's always danger of pirates or bankers.
Joseph, Captain Overstock's has told me that the Patriot can outrun any pirate craft. And with Mr. Coons aboard as sailing master, certainly we will not run ashore so that we will fall prey to the bankers.
Oh, Theo.
And so they talked as the Patriot sailed down Winyaw Bay to the bar at Charleston. And there about noon, as Joseph Alston left the ship, he saw Theodosia for the last time. In New York, Aaron Burr stood up in the battery, looking out toward the Narrows, waiting to see the Patriots sailing safely into port. And in South Carolina, Joseph Alston waited for news.
Another mail and still no letter. Could the rumors of a gale off Cape Hatteras be true?
Joseph's mind was tortured.
3 weeks, not one line from her. Oh, gracious God.
He wrote again to Aaron Burr.
30 days have passed. My wife is either captured or lost. What a destiny is mine. When I turned from the grave of my boy, I thought myself no longer vulnerable. Now, my boy, my wife, both gone.
What happened to the Patriot and to Theodosia? At the close of the War of 1812, a British admiral ventured an opinion.
The letter of Joseph Alston was received and read by me.
You were in command of the British fleet off Cape Hatteras?
I was, and Alston's request for safe passage was promptly granted.
And the schooner bearing the lady went on its way?
It did. But a violent storm had arisen which scattered my fleet. Doubtless the pilot boat and all on board were up.
Twenty years after the disappearance of the Patriot, a story was published in which a dying sailor made a confession.
It was on January 3rd, 1813, in the latitude of Cape Hatteras.
This is Dominique Yu.
We overhauled the schooner and boarded her.
And you were the captain?
Yes, I was the captain. We kill every man of the crew and all the passengers, except a beautiful young woman.
Who was this beautiful young woman?
Aaron Burr's daughter, we found out. I fought all my men who went after her. Then I told her I had to kill her.
And you killed her?
See, she walked the plank without a word. I watched her sink. She came up once. And then she sank forever.
In 1850, an old man named Benjamin Burdick, an inmate of the poorhouse in Cassopolis, Michigan, told another version.
I was a sailor on the pirate vessel that captured the schooner off Cape Hatteras. When the captain told the lady she must walk the plank, she asked for a few minutes alone.
And what happened?
She came back from her cabin, all dressed in white. Most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. I held the plank for her. She stepped up on the plank, calm as she could be.
Did she say anything?
She knelt down and prayed.
Yes.
Then she asked us to send word to her father and her husband so they wouldn't keep on wondering what happened to her.
Did she mention her son?
She said her son was dead. She walked a few steps, then she stopped and raised her arms. She said, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." Then she crossed her arms on her bosom and walked into the ocean. Of all the sins of my worthless life, tripping that plank was the worst.
The day after this confession, Benjamin Burdick died. The story had become almost a legend. Aaron Burr was said to have located two other pirates who had confessed making Theodosia walk the plank, and he had prosecuted them until they were hanged. A dying sailor in Texas was said to have confessed the same crime, and so on and so on. But none of these accounts was ever verified. But, verified or unverified, the mystery is deepened by the Nag's Head portrait.
That's my cousin, Theodosia Burr, as certain as I'm living.
Exactly, and she has the Burr nose and eyes, and look at that chin.
This portrait, you will remember, was found in a shack on Nag's Head, on the stormy shore of Lake Hatteras, North Carolina. 100 years ago, this barren waste of shifting sands was the scene of many shipwrecks. The bankers or land pirates used every means to lure vessels ashore in order to plunder them. On stormy nights, they used to hobble a horse, tie a lantern to its neck, and walk it up and down the shore. Ships passing through these dangerous waters, misled by the bobbing light, ventured too close in and were smashed on the bar. Then the bankers swarmed over the hapless victims, slaughtered them, and looted the vessel.
My husband was not a land pirate.
A Nag's Head portrait was discovered in this woman's shack in 1869.
Like I said, my husband and the others saw the schooner under full sail, bearing down on the bar. And they put out and boarded her.
Did your husband bring anything else ashore besides the portrait?
Well, he brought me a trunk of woman's clothes.
Now, did the clothes fit you?
No, they were too small.
The solution to the mystery of Theodosia Burr's disappearance may be tied up with the Nag's Head portrait. If the painting actually is Theodosia, then did the bankers lure the patriot to destruction and murder everyone ashore before bringing the portrait ashore? Many members of the Burr family have said that the woman in the painting bears a family resemblance. And no one in all these years has claimed the portrait is anyone but Theodosia. What then happened to Theodosia Burr? Was Theodosia Burr lost with a patriot in a storm off Cape Hatteras? Was she captured by pirates and made to walk the plank? Was it the patriot that crashed on the shore at Nag's Head? And was Theodosia Burr killed by the bankers? Time is the judge, and history the jury, and you are the 13th juror. The decision rests with you.
I've just heard Kenneth McGowan, distinguished writer, critic, and producer, in The 13th Juror, an NBC Hollywood Radio City production written and directed by Arnold Marquis. Tune in at this same time in the weeks to come and hear the famous unsolved mysteries of John Wilkes Booth, Niccolo Paganini, The Lost Dauphin, Marshall Ney, and many others on The 13th Juror. The music was composed and conducted by Mort Glickman under the supervision of Henry Russell. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.